Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Every team, every topic, everywhere, this is Believe.
Ich warte seit Wochen auf diesen Tag und tanz vor Freude über den Asphalt, als wär's ein Rhythmus, als gäb's ein Lied, was mich immer weiter durch die Straßen zieht. Komm dir entgegen.
Hallo und welcome to Gegenpressing, the Bundesliga Podcast. I'm Manu Feit, he's Stefan Bienkowski. And Stefan, how's it going? How? I say that with a laugh because everyone knows what's coming, right?
Yeah, I'm doing good. As you can see, anyone listening to this pod can't see, I'm a little pink in the face because I'm sunburnt, because yesterday I just grabbed a wife, grabbed a dog, grabbed my hill walking boots and just went for a massive hike, and I just got lost in the wilderness yesterday. Honestly, I feel like after Saturday and after that, what truly drained me emotionally, and you as well, I think, you know, we obviously did the 2-hour Twitter spaces and YouTube videos, and we're obviously doing work for Transfer Market in between as well. So I felt like, it's going to sound so ridiculous, but you know, if you ever watch like one of those old like anime cartoons or movies where at the end of the movie, the guy, or maybe like a Western where the guy just kind of walks off into the horizon. I felt a bit like that after what was a truly mental Bundesliga season. I was like, do you know what? I've had enough. And I felt bad because I got home and I was like, oh crap, there's the playoffs, you know, and there's the Zweite Bundesliga conclusion, which didn't happen to catch, but we're going to talk about it on this show because I know you did. But I got home and I was like, oh, I was just needed to get away from it all because it was a pretty crazy conclusion to the season, I think we can comfortably say.
I'm not going to lie, I think it was done at around noon my time and I went straight to the beer garden. It's a typical Bavarian wood because I felt like you. You feel exhausted a little bit, right? Like we had no skin in this game, but obviously it felt a little bit traumatic almost if you are a Dortmund fan. Obviously, if you're a Bayern Munich fan, I don't know where you sit with this emotionally, but it just felt like a lot. And then, of course, we put out a lot of content. The piece on, I mean, we got to talk about all of it. Maybe before we go too much into it, actually give a little time slot for our sponsors here because, you know, we need to get paid. But yeah, we got a ton of to discuss today, Stefan. So let's try to get into it after this break.
This episode of the Gegenpressing Podcast is brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline.ag is your number one source for all your basketball info, stats, news, and scores. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest player reports for this year's pro basketball playoffs. BetOnline is always your sports information headquarters this season, as we have you covered for all your sports wagering needs. Basketball, MLB, NHL hockey, right to UFC and boxing. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to get your betting info, including live betting options and your favorite casino and card games you can play right from your home. Head to the website today, or use your mobile device to get in on the action. Be sure to use our promo code BELIEVE, BLEAV, BELIEVE, to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. That is BLEAV for 50% welcome bonus. Bet online, where the game starts.
Yeah, as I said, emotional draining. Saturday was a lot. Sunday was a lot too if you're a HSV fan. We'll get to that towards the end of the show, don't you worry. But Bayern Munich win it, and yet nothing feels okay. it feels there was, of course, there was huge celebrations on Sunday, the usual Marienplatz show, the women's team winning it as well, right? With an 11-1 win. So they actually managed to get both teams out to celebrate the championship together, which I actually thought was a really nice touch. They had the two players of each team walk out together. And I think that was a really nice touch. Of course, all of that seems to be overshadowed with what happened between Thursday and Saturday. And I managed to piece most of it together on Sunday morning when I had a few phone calls with people who, with direct knowledge of the situation. Obviously, we cannot name who these people are. But Stefan, I saw some comments on Twitter that describe Bayern's firing of Oliver Kahn and then him not being allowed to go to Cologne as ruthless and embarrassing for an organization and the way they acted towards a former club legend. But I think when you read the piece that I wrote for Gegenpressing on the Substack, it becomes quite clear why Oliver Kahn was not allowed to travel and why he wasn't there. Because this was not a clean separation. In fact, this is not a clean separation yet, right? In terms of what happened when you compare it to what happened with Salihamidzic's reaction was to him being released by the club, or voted off the board, right? And subsequently being a free agent now and signing a termination contract. Oliver Kahn refused to do the same thing. He blamed pretty much Hasan Salihamidzic for all the signings, called himself a scapegoat. There was words used that I cannot repeat on this podcast. I actually had the entire dialogue said to me. And yeah, I think when you have that sort of information, Stefan, it becomes quite clear why Oliver Kahn could not be with the team on Saturday or on Sunday even for the women's final.
Yeah, it's quite interesting actually reading your piece, and it's a really excellent piece, which I really would implore any Bayern fan to, or any German football fan to go sign up to the Substack and read. I know I would say that, but honestly, it's a really great in-depth piece into what's happened behind the scenes. And you know, I kind of read through as a blow for blow take on what was going on, and I thought it was really interesting in the sense that you look at the way that Oliver Kahn reacted and the potential kind of surprise of that. And I thought to myself, how can anyone be surprised that Oliver Kahn would react this way? Does nobody remember what this guy was like as a footballer? He took absolutely no shit from teammates or from opponents or from managers or anyone. It was his way or the highway. And his first reaction to most things was just sheer outrage and anger. So, I didn't envy the person that had to hand him his P45 slip. I don't know if they have P45 slips in the US, but basically in the UK, it's what
the equivalent.
It's what you get handed when you lose your job. And I could totally imagine him flipping a few desks, smashing a few windows, and then, you know, just kind of driving his car through the campus, just kind of crash into things. And it seems like that wasn't far off what did happen. I think a lot of people had a fair point by saying they didn't have to do it this way. I think even Joshua Kimmich came out and said it as well. I think you quoted him in the piece as saying, the really interesting thing for that is you can obviously look at this from a kind of very, you can take a kind of 10,000 foot view of this and be like, right, Bayern removing the chess pieces on the board. And from this point of view, it makes perfect sense. The last couple of years have not been good from a player recruitment point of view. Obviously, Oliver Kahn took issue with that because he thinks that Salihamidzic on his own or specifically who's in charge of that. But you can certainly take the view that, you know, the club hasn't been run properly, so the people who've been running the club have to go. And that's fair enough. But I think if you kind of read between the lines and if you kind of look at what a lot of the reporting from Bayern has been stating this season, it is that the players have been getting really fed up with the manner in which they've been kind of out of the loop with all this stuff. You kind of go back to the Nagelsmann stuff, and there's still, up until like a week or two ago, a lot of reporting pointing out how upset some key figures in the squad were that you know, not only were they kind of aware that this was even a situation that was about to happen, they were completely out of the blue when he got sacked, but also in the following days and weeks that happened, you know, the club, or certain members of the club, shall we say, were going out of their way to say to journalists off the record that, look, they're like, oh yeah, you know, the squad weren't happy with Nagelsmann. They didn't like him. They're the reason he had to go. And I think that's something that kind of stuck in the throat of a lot of players at Bayern. You now fast forward to the end of the season, and yeah, sure, Thomas Tuchel's still in charge, but it's the same thing all over again, where, you know, the players are completely left out of it. There's obviously a group of players there who probably, you know, not only Ozan Ibrahimovic, the reason they're at the club, he obviously put a lot of faith in a lot of them with the kind of string of contract extensions that they announced last year. So they probably feel a degree of loyalty to him alone as it is. And, you know, we're not talking about Ibrahimovic here. I mean, people who might not, you know, I guess this is kind of inside baseball to an extent, but, you know, when you are in the mix zone and you kind of see the way these players and the officials interact with each other, you know, Ibrahimovic isn't some kind of stuffed shirt who sits in the boardroom and does interact with players. He's down there in the mix zone, in the changing room, high-fiving, hugging, celebrating with the players. Yeah. That's obviously why he felt very strongly about being there on Saturday and Sunday for the celebration. So it's not really that they've just sacked some backroom guy that the players hadn't, who only signed the players' checks every month. This is the guy who had a huge part in the club. So on the one hand, you can understand why they did it. And I think we did a video on this, obviously, on Saturday after the game. And my point was basically, yeah, you can understand why. This is Bayern Munich. If you're not the absolute best, you know, you have to get going. So in that regard, you can see why Kane and Simon, which have moved on. But as you made a great point of saying in your video, in your article, the consequences of this are something that the club may end up kind of feeling for the rest of the summer.
Well, you know, just briefly on this, we had Nick Husse, the agent of Alfonso Davies, speak out today, right? And saying we had a contract ready for an extension. Now we don't know who's going to be in charge. We don't know who we're going to talk to. There was a pre-agreement in place, but now he's flying back to Edmonton to, you know, without a new contract. And he's going even as far and saying, well, maybe it's better to wait until next summer to sign a new contract and see what's going on. There was similar things said about Lucas Hernandez. You know, there was a contract agreement in place as well. And now Hasan Salihamidzic is gone. We don't know whether there's going to be a new sporting director. In fact, the sporting director that was approached was Max Eberl, and that's not happening. You know, he can't get out of his contract, and Leipzig will not let him out of his contract. One source that I spoke to said, well, maybe for 30 million euros. So, you know, that is... that's not happening.
Why do I have a sudden sense of deja vu coming over me right now? Bayern Munich wants someone from Leipzig who might cost 20 or 30 million euros. Where does that come from?
No one is paying 30 million euros for a sporting director, I think. I mean, we've seen it all, but I think that is kind of out of question. But, you know, it is fascinating too. Another source that I spoke to said that Thomas Tuchel, when he heard about the news, and the timeline, I'm not 100% certain here, but he said that, and I paraphrase, well, if you guys don't want to have me here, I can throw the towel and leave as well. You know, and so even Tuchel was upset in a way that, you know, it apparently led to shouting. And so you're quite right. I mean, at the end of the day, Salihamidzic made a lot of the signings. We can all sit here and say, okay, these didn't work out, especially this year. And I think there's a really good point that you can make to that. But at the flip side of that is that the players really trusted him. He managed to convince someone like Sadio Mane to come to Bayern Munich, right? He was very far down with a lot of signings. The very fact that someone like Harry Kane is being mentioned over and over at Bayern Munich again is because there's a belief that Hasan Salihamidzic can convince a player like that. So that's the flip side of it. Whether those signings are good or not, other question, right? And that's the point that Oliver Kahn made. He said, I cannot be blamed, and again, I'm kind of paraphrasing here, for all these garbage signings that Hasan Salihamidzic made, right? And paraphrasing and translating here. But, you know, there's always several sides to each story. And I think what the ultimate ending of this is for Bayern Munich is that they are finding themselves in a really difficult transition phase at the moment without a sporting director. Right, because right now it looks like Rummenigge, Hoeneß, and Tuchel are going to make the signings. So it's end of May, it's June next week. You know, you have usually at this time, around this time, Bayern Munich have already signed 3-4 players. They might be announcing Leimer soon, that's it. So it's a really difficult situation, Stefan.
Yeah, and also it says a lot about the difficulties the club have had over the last couple of years that that Hoeneß and Rummenigge have basically had to be parachuted back in here to fix things. Obviously, you could argue that Hoeneß never left, and I think that's something we've mentioned either directly or indirectly on this podcast for the last year or so. I think it's probably the worst-kept secret around Munich that he's still kind of pulling some strings. Rummenigge, perhaps not so much. He obviously goes to the games. He's still around. I'm sure he's offering advice and things, but he seemed to be quite happy to kind of step away from it. But remember when Kahn and Šajović came in, this was meant to be the kind of new generation of, you know, Bayern coming in and proving that, you know, FC Bayern wasn't just the Uli Hoeneß show. It wasn't just the Karl-Heinz Rummenigge show. It was a club that could succeed no matter who's running it, that it had multiple dynasties lined up. It could, you know, it could weather the storm and, you know, project itself into the future. And that's all gone up in smoke, you know? And I think that's maybe not the biggest issue right now. I doubt Bayern fans are really worried about that. Some may even be celebrating that Rummenigge and Hoeneß are back. But, you know, these aren't young guys. And whether they can kind of get things back on track next season and whether they can get Bayern back to kind of being this kind of squad and team capable of fighting in the Champions League, it still doesn't really address the issue that this club remain incapable of moving on from that generation. And even if they are able to get someone like Max Eberl in, it doesn't strike me, you know, with all due respect, Heiner and is it Deason? I forgot the guy's name, the CEO Deason. That they're bringing in. Deason, yeah. These guys aren't really kind of the kind of personalities or, you know, powerful egos that are going to step in and say, right, Hoeneß, thanks, but we've got it from here. In fact, I think that's probably a large reason why Heiner got the job in the first place, in the sense that, you know, he's a very agreeable person for Hoeneß and Rummenigge. So it's not a bad thing by any means. I'm not saying these guys shouldn't be in charge or anything like that. And obviously, you know, Hoeneß and Rummenigge have proved time and time again that they know exactly what Bayern need and what Bayern needs. But the fact that they are unable to find a successor or successors to their jobs, or at least the very first people they turn to, has gone up in smoke. It's really quite interesting to me because it may suggest that in the long run, Bayern are in a bit of trouble here because they don't seem to have a long-term vision now that the guys who were meant to be taking over from the last guys have been sacked.
Yeah, no, totally. There's so many succession references in here, but I can't mention any of them because I don't think you've watched the finale yet. So I'm going to leave it at that, but you'll find out, Stefan. There is a few good ones in there. I guess what I find, and this is maybe where we can slightly transition it to the other side, Bayern Munich win in the title thanks to a gorgeous Musiala goal. I think one that when the dust settles on all of this will go into the Bayern Munich Museum as one of the greatest goals ever scored in club history because it did save the club's title. At a point when it really seemed all lost. And I think, too, it might go down in history as maybe the last one of a dynasty because there was an interesting tweet put out by Tobias Escher, who was with Spielverlagerung in Germany, right? And he tried to make a different point, but it's not the point that stuck with me, is where he showed a graph of Dortmund and Bayern Munich's points totals. And what's really telling was that over the last 5 years, Bayern's point total has gone down every single year. And Dortmund has kind of closed the gap. And I feel like that's going to keep happening. You know, this is the lowest point total since 2010. And this was only Dortmund's fourth highest point total ever. So there's a lot of people out there that's saying this is the end of the Bundesliga. We may as well close shop. If Bayern can't be beaten with this, they will never be beaten. I'm not quite in that camp. I don't actually see a reason for thinking this is going to get better. And so maybe as Dortmund fans wake up from this nightmare, Stefan, that was the Saturday, I have a guy who's in my posts all the time, is one of those Twitter people who like don't even follow you but have something to say all the time. He's like, oh, they're never going to close the gap to Bayern. It's finances and they can't do it and it's not fair. Yada, yada, yada. So that I will say, Bayern's financial gap to Dortmund did not fail to beat Mainz. You know, Dortmund did that themselves. And to that, we have to go to Dortmund. And the drama, the dramatic experience that Dortmund fans went through on a day where they thought they would celebrate the title.
Yeah, I've now had a couple of days to kind of process what happened here, and where I was kind of full of sympathy for Dortmund, and you know, we saw the images on TV of the players looking dejected, and you know your heart really went out for guys like Marco Reus, Mats Hummels, who may never get a chance to kind of win our title again. You know, you saw Edin Terzic in front of the yellow wall. You saw the appreciation, support, all of them got from the club support, and you kind of couldn't help but feel sorry for them. I've now slept on it twice, and I've kind of managed to find a little pocket of anger and rage, which I'm more than happy to just kind of like unfurl for all our listeners here, because there's no doubt that Dortmund dropped the ball, to use a sports metaphor from another sport, which is, I'm sure, is extremely comfortable, fitting. They should have won the title and they didn't, and that's their fault. And I think, you know, there's a few things here. You know, there will be haters who don't watch German football, who if anything, maybe enjoy kind of beating down on it, and will say, oh my God, if Dortmund couldn't win it this season, they'll never win it. As if to suggest that like the stars aligned for Dortmund, which is just simply not the case. As you said, yes, Bayern were terrible for much of the season, but I think Dortmund were terrible for much of the season too, to be perfectly honest with you. You know, you kind of, not only the fact that poor Sebastian Haller was obviously struck down with a horrible illness and was able to come back, he missed half the season. You know, the club were extremely inconsistent in the first half of the campaign. They were, I think they finished the first half of the season in sixth place, if I'm not mistaken, if my memory serves me right. So we're not talking, and you know, never mind a whole raft of injuries, a whole number of new signings that didn't settle in. I mean, I can distinctly remember us talking during the January break about how Schlotterbeck and Niklas Süle just have not got going at Dortmund. You know, so this wasn't a case in which the stars aligned for Dortmund and they still managed to lose it, which would suggest that, you know, Bayern Munich are inevitable. It's quite the opposite, I think. I think Dortmund were an extremely average team for most of the season. Yes, they finished very strongly up until the final match day. They looked fantastic after the winter break when they finally got some players match fit. Terzic managed to obviously spend a lot more time in the training pitch and that kind of mid-season break with them all. And they finally looked like a great team. But there's still so much room for improvement in this Dortmund side. And I think that's the key thing here. You know, I was kind of looking over the reactions from a number of people at the club after the defeat on Saturday. And you know, you had Vatska saying, oh, well, you know, we're Dortmund, we're from the Ruhr area, we're used to kind of picking ourselves up and getting on with it, we'll go again.
Yeah.
We'll bounce back, which I find quite surprising, because I'd actually argue that for the last 10 seasons, they've done anything but bounce back, and they've been extremely inconsistent, they've been extremely inefficient in the transfer market, and they've done anything but trying to bounce back. So I'm not sure he's the best person to say, you know, we'll definitely have a team capable of fighting for the championship next season. And then there's other things like, you know, Sebastian Kehl. I think it was either Sebastian Kehl or Vatska saying, well, you know, the real problem is that we didn't pick enough points in the first half of the season. To which I would say, well, that's because you sacked your head coach in May and you appointed a novice in charge. Now, this is not me trying to, you know, bash on Terzic. I think he proved himself in the second half of the season. He's got plenty of great attributes to the coach. There's no doubt that the players have bought into what he does. He's got great performances out of players who just could not perform at Dortmund for a number of years. I think, you know, Brandt and Guerrero, perhaps a good example. But let's not forget that the guy that he sacked in May finished third with Leipzig, only about 6 or 7 points below Dortmund, you know?
And probably would have won the title if he had been in charge all season.
You took the words right out of my mouth there. Now, this is obviously me looking back with 2020 vision here, because there's no doubt that there were issues in the squad when Marco Rosa was in charge. Maybe certain players didn't like him. The supporters weren't entirely enthralled by him, especially after what happened to Gladbach. So, you know, I'm not really going as far as to say, yeah, of course Dortmund would have walked to the title if Rosa had stayed in charge. What I'm saying is the club are huffing and puffing about a dodgy transitional period in the first half of the season, but that was entirely of their own making, you know. And I keep referencing this newsletter I wrote a few weeks ago when I basically questioned whether Dortmund deserved to win the title. And it wasn't me trying to troll the club, but it wasn't me trying to wind up supporters. I had some people saying it was clickbait on Twitter, which baffles me since we run a newsletter with a paywall. Kind of defeats the purpose of a paywall. Yeah. If you're writing, people don't sign up to clickbait articles, so it's not really what we're in the habit of doing. The point I was making was I was looking through the stats and saying, well, how much have Dortmund actually improved this season? And it is minimal. Now, that's not to take away from the credit they deserve for mounting a challenge. Point I'm trying to make here is that Dortmund have a lot of space to go into, and it is imperative that they know that. It's imperative that they don't put their feet up this summer and say, well, we got within a whisper of Bayern. If we did more of the same, we should be all right. They have to do a lot more, you know, and I'm sure we'll talk about this in the transfer show this week in terms of players that they can sign, positions they need to strengthen. Obviously, Guerrero's, you know, confirmed that he's now leaving the club. That's a big miss. Maybe Bellingham joins him. Who knows? But the point is that Dortmund made steps forward this season, but they have to make a few more to ensure that all the good work they did this year doesn't just go up in smoke next season. I think that's fair. I don't think I'm being harsh. I don't know. You tell me.
No. I mean, there is. I wrote this article saying that they deserve to win the title, and I stand by it because, like, in the end of the day, they had the same amount of points as Bayern, and really, it was one goal going one way or another. And I am of the firm belief, and I say that Bayern, I have lots of Bayern fans saying they didn't deserve the title. Excuse my language, that's bullshit. If you're first after 34 games, and if it's goal differential, it doesn't really matter, right? If you're first after 34 games, you deserve to win the title. So let's just throw that notion right out of the window. I think also if you're second after 34 games, and it's even if it's just goal differential, you do not deserve to win the title. It's really that simple, right? I think one thing that I kind of want to point out, and this should maybe give Dortmund fans some hope, is that they did dominate the last 19 games of the Bundesliga season. You know, they finish essentially with 11 points ahead of Bayern Munich, 8 points ahead of RB Leipzig. 6 points ahead of RB Leipzig. But, you know, they did dominate that second half of the season in convincing fashion. And if you do take that spread over 34 games, they'll win the title quite easily, right? Probably with a record amount of points for them. Not necessarily a Bundesliga record, but a record amount of points for them. So there is that. And I also say, okay, if you come with the right conclusions from that run, I'm not saying roll it back. Don't come back with the exact same squad. Don't do that. But I do say that the trend is your friend. And if you do make the right decisions in the summer, you can come out of the gates and play that sort of season that you played in the second half. You're going to win the title in next season. It is really that simple. Of course, psychologically, how you're going to come over this traumatic experience of losing the title at the last day of the season. What is Bayern Munich going to do? What is Leipzig going to do? We have to put them into the equation too. It's not going to be just one title challenger next year. I think it's going to be three, right? So there's all of that. But if you draw the right conclusions from what happened on Saturday, and if you look at what happened since the World Cup break, you have a good chance of winning the title next year. And I think that only happens though if you are willing to make the sort of ruthless decisions that Bayern Munich made this year. And I think that is, you can say about Bayern Munich whatever you want. When they make a mistake, they don't care about personal feelings, love to the club, what a person means to a club. They put the club over every single individual. That's why the club name, and they were the first team to do this. So the club name is on the top of the shirt and the name of the player at the bottom. And some teams have now copied that, right? But they were the first to do it because the club is always above the individual. And that's why they're so successful. And unless other teams in Germany or anywhere really understand that, I think the only other team really that has that sort of ethos is Real Madrid. You know, Dortmund need to look at Bayern Munich rather than saying, well, we're the Westphalian, we do things different, we're poor, we don't have that sort of... You want to beat Bayern Munich, you need to beat Bayern Munich. You need to be ruthless. You need to put the club above everything else. And that also might include, this sounds really harsh, but at Bayern Munich, Watzke would have been fired a long time ago. And
yeah,
that is the difference. That's the difference.
Yeah. No, you're right. And it's a point I made on Twitter, actually, when the news came out that it's an interesting contrast that Bayern have sacked their kind of CEO and sporting director. They won the league, but Dortmund obviously are kind of sticking with what they have. And, you know, I've actually been very critical of Watzke over the last kind of 10 years. I've been very critical of Dortmund's kind of transfer policy over the last 10 years. I actually think one of the reasons they came close to the title this year is because they kind of changed that for a start. Instead of selling Haaland and bringing in another youngster, they actually brought in some ready-made players for a change. And you can see how much of a difference that made to this team, where you've suddenly got more senior players like Haller, and I know Malin finally settled in as well. Even Adeyemi to an extent. Mm. He's not just some young gun. He's obviously done what he can in Austrian football and you know, has kind of developed. Nicolas Sule is a good example of that too, I suppose. More senior players who aren't just signed in the hope of selling them to the Premier League in 4 or 5 years. So I think, and I hope Dortmund have kind of turned a corner in that regard. I think they know that they kind of have to maybe change things up a bit. Yeah, you're right. And this is kind of what I'm saying in the sense that, you know, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. There's a lot going well in this Dortmund team. Terzic is obviously getting a really good vibe out of all of them. He's getting great performance out of a lot of that team. We actually recently did a kind of transfer show, I think, and I basically made the point that even if Jude Bellingham was to move on, they still got all the kind of building blocks there for a strong squad. So that's a lot better than you could have said back when, you know, they relied on Erling Haaland or when they relied on Jadon Sancho, Christian Pulisic, Aubameyang, whoever, blah, blah, blah. So there's a lot going well for Dortmund. But as you said, they need that ruthlessness. They need to take that last kind of 10% to kind of put their foot down and say, no, we're here to try and win something, you know. And, you know, you and I both know this firsthand, that trying to get someone at Dortmund or an ex-player or an ambassador, whatever you want to call them, to say are Dortmund title challengers, they look at you like you've got three heads. Like, we're not allowed to say that. We can't say that. And it's those kind of little psychological things that kind of build up. They're almost kind of like, you know, a little snowball that kind of turns into a boulder when it starts falling down the hill, in the sense that, you know, it breeds this kind of weird psychology at the club. And perhaps that's why... maybe that's why they choked against Mainz. Maybe that's why they choked when I went to go see them at the Allianz Arena in their Clásico, where they were very good and suddenly they just kind of choke when the pressure is on them. So there's still a lot of work to be done there, but yeah, they've done well. I hope that's the point that comes across when Dortmund fans listen to this. I hope they don't think we're just going to bash on their club when they're down. They've done a great job. They just have to keep at it.
The right conclusions from this season will win you the title next year. Because Bayern Munich will not play a monster year next year. They can't. They don't have the sporting leaders in the club right now to draw the right conclusion or to make the right decisions themselves. You know, there is a period of weakness that's probably going to last. The right conclusions this summer could lead to Dortmund win the title next year. And I think that is, I think, the main point that they have to... I know it's going to take a few days, maybe even weeks, you know, for this to settle in. But at the end of the day, what they have put on the field since the World Cup break was astonishing. And if you are able to bottle that and bring it into next year, you are going to win the title. It's really that simple and straightforward. I know it's probably a lot harder than we make it sound, but I do really feel that. Now, having, you know, had the time to look back, Stefan, we need to park some time for the bottom half of the table. Schalke relegated. I know you were rooting for them a long time. It feels like, though, that club might be back sooner than we think. It wasn't a chaotic relegation. And at the end of the day, also, you look at it and you say they've done a lot of things and put a lot of pieces into the place that makes them probably come back up. Speaking about coming up, and we were asked about this from our listeners, HSV, Hamburger Sportverein, were up for a good 11 minutes until Heidenheim scored two goals in what is an extended extra time at the... Where were they playing again? Sorry, I'm blanking here.
Regensburg.
Regensburg, thank you. Yeah, both HSV and Heidenheim were playing in relegated sides, right? HSV got the job done against Sandhausen, 1-0 win, which isn't a given. A few years ago, they lost 5-1 to Sandhausen and threw away promotion. So they got the job done themselves. And then it still wasn't enough. And I got asked why it was so much extra time. It's because it's quite simple. There was two VAR decisions that just extended the period for quite some time in Regensburg. Poor HSV though, Stefan. They now have to go to relegation playoffs against Stuttgart. So we have two giants play for the final Bundesliga spot.
Yeah, we do. And, you know, as we've been kind of saying for the last couple of weeks, whether it would be Stuttgart or Schalke, I think I would have probably favoured both of them in that playoff spot against Hamburg, who have looked fine this season, but haven't looked exactly like world beaters. So it'll be interesting to see. We will be doing a bonus show on this, by the way, a reaction show, which will be coming out Friday morning. We'll be doing another Substack thread on it, so subscribers can follow along and watch with us. It should be a good game. But yeah, it was absolutely gut-wrenching for me this weekend because someone who's trying to get as many of the big Bundesliga traditional clubs back in the top flight, we first have Dortmund drop points. I was in a very weird position this season or this weekend where I was supporting Dortmund and Schalke, which just really goes to show how much of a neutral I am in the Bundesliga. People don't believe me when I say that. They're like, oh, he must be a Bayern fan, he must be a Dortmund fan, he must be a Leipzig fan or whatever. I was supporting Dortmund and Schalke this weekend, so make of that what you will.
Yeah.
You know, Dortmund lose a title, Schalke get relegated, double whammy. And then I come home from this big hike on Sunday to see the Hamburger on the cusp of actually winning promotion, only for this to happen. And obviously, no offence to Heidenheim, they deserve to be there. But it just feels like, it just feels like one thing after the other. I'm sure Heidenheim will be great in the Bundesliga next season. And we'll definitely try and speak a lot more about them in the coming weeks and over this coming summer season, so hopefully our listeners can have a really good look at them before they do get into the league. But this playoff spot is going to be really, really interesting because I don't know. I think the odds are up against Hamburg, and I guess we'll just kind of have to wait and see what happens, won't we?
Yeah, well, sooner or later, Hamburg is going to win the lottery and come up, right? I mean, it has to happen eventually. You know, programming note. I've put in my credential request for the game against HSV in Stuttgart, so it looks like I will be there. Obviously, I am in Hamburg for the promotion relegation second leg, because that's where our office is, and I have to blow the cobwebs off my desk because I haven't been in a year. so I will be there in Hamburg as well, and so you will get some bonus content from that too. If you are a subscriber, but Stefan, it's not over yet. I felt like on Saturday the season was over and we're kind of like relief, and then you realize it's like, no, well, there is still the relegation playoffs, there is still the German Cup final. We dodged a bullet, I guess, with Leverkusen not making the Europa League final, so that would have been even more. But yeah, there's another 2 weeks of season ahead of us until we can, sort of take a little bit of a break.
Take a break, yeah, absolutely. And Leverkusen are still waiting to see if they actually will be in the Europa League next season. Some interesting kind of comments from them, actually, where you had, I think you had Xabi Alonso saying, yeah, obviously I'll be supporting. So the way it works is that if Frankfurt win the final against Leipzig, they get into Europe. But if Leipzig win, who are already in Europe, then the spot goes to the next team in the Bundesliga, which would be Bayer Leverkusen. So you had Xabi Alonso saying in his press conference, yeah, of course I'll be supporting Leipzig in the final. And then I think they maybe spoke to Hradecky or someone, and he's like, yeah, I understand how it's supposed to work, but I don't like Red Bull, so I'll be supporting Frankfurt. It just feels like the most kind of like
also Radetzky, that's his former club, right? So Radetzky came from Frankfurt. So maybe there's a little bit of sympathy still there as well.
I get it. But even to the extent that he won't get to play in Europa League, I don't know. That seems quite, I don't know. Anyway, nice guy.
Well, maybe he won't be playing Europa League next year, even if Leverkusen are there, because there is always rumors about a new goalkeeper. So maybe he just doesn't give a, you know. Anyhow, Stefan, I know you have to run for another obligation. So let's wrap this show up. As always, this is brought to you by Bet Online. As I said, we have a little bit of a different schedule on the Substack this week. My post is already out. This podcast, of course, then came out second. Stefan's newsletter will be in my spot. But then on top of that, there will be a reaction piece coming if credentials come through, which they usually do, from Stuttgart, from the first leg.
And the transfer show on Wednesday.
And the transfer show on Wednesday, of course. And then, of course, there's also going to be a these credentials have come through, so I can guarantee that one. There will be a reaction piece from the German Cup final as well. So, yes, lots of stuff coming your way. So stay tuned. Sign up for the newsletter. And we'll be back soon, Stefan.
Yeah, I was going to say, sorry to cut you off at the very end there, but we also, as if running a podcast and a Substack wasn't hard enough, we've also decided to start sticking videos on YouTube up whenever we can be bothered. So yes. Subscribe to that as well, if you don't mind. We seem to be everywhere at the moment. But thanks so much, people who already have subscribed and watched the videos.
We've been busy and we keep ourselves busy, and we'll keep ourselves busy for at least another 10 days or so. Well, enjoy the final games of this season, whether it's the relegation playoffs, whether it's the cup. I guess really you can only enjoy the relegation playoffs if your team is not in it. I know that from personal experience. If your team is in it, not enjoyable. If your team is not in it, great fun. Anyways, we'll be back soon. Until then, auf Wiedersehen.